This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The turnaround in Asia.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott J. Gow. A month ago, we were telling you every day how the Asian stock markets were falling, falling, falling. Well, things have turned around, and then some. Today, China's market made gains for the seventh straight day. Japan's Nikkei is now on a four-day winning streak. And Hong Kong had its best week in about a year. Wall Street was a little more tepid yesterday. The Dow put on 13 points to 12,461, but the NASDAQ dropped 4 to 2,451. The S&P 500 fell half a point. Stocks in Europe opened a tad lower this morning. Now back to China and Hong Kong. Hong Kong holds elections this Sunday to choose a leader known as the chief executive. Election might be too strong of a word, though. We already know who's going to win. Our correspondent in China, Scott Tong, joins us from Shanghai. Scott, how does this election work?
Well, if we go back, remember 10 years ago when Britain handed Hong Kong back to China? Mm-hmm. Well, at the time, the deal was that Hong Kong would be part of China, but it would retain a degree of autonomy. And what that means in this election is 800 people get to pick who the winner is. And these 800 people are largely the business community. And they see the world largely the way Beijing does. They support kind of the handpicked candidate. His name is Donald Zeng. He's the current chief executive. And on Sunday, he's going to be the chief executive again.
And why does the business community like him?
Well, it's kind of like the business community in the States generally. They want stability. They want no surprises. As one Hong Kong comedian put it, just shut up and make money. The idea being people will be reasonably satisfied and they won't kind of rise up against the government.
So I take it then that the Hong Kong economy is going just fine then?
Better than that. GDP growth, 5% a year. Mainland Chinese tourists are going to Hong Kong. Hong Kong bankers are taking these giant Chinese banks public, kind of the biggest IPOs ever. And Hong Kong investors are putting their money into mainland Chinese manufacturers.
So in the end, okay, Hong Kong's making a lot of money for China. I mean, are people in Hong Kong okay with this whole situation?
Well, Hong Kong people are known for being pragmatic. So on one hand, a lot of people are pretty okay with a good economic situation. On the other hand, there are a fair number of democracy activists, but they do see signs of progress in their view. And when he's been pushed, the chief executive, Donald Zeng, has said, in 5 years, I will present a roadmap for how we get to universal suffrage.
All right, Scott Tong, our correspondent in Shanghai. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
In this country, the Senate's been debating the finer points of a $3 billion budget plan for next year. One of the votes expected today involves a bid to raise taxes on cigarettes. Hillary Wickay reports from Washington.
Republican Senator Gordon Smith of Oregon offered a plan to hike tobacco taxes in order to boost funding for a health insurance program for low-income children. Smith's amendment would puff up the price of a pack of cigarettes by 61 cents. Taxes on other tobacco products would also go up. The estimated $35 billion that could be raised over 5 years would go to the state children's health insurance plan. The program currently insures millions of low-income children, and the tax boost would help expand coverage. The bid by Smith faces uncertain prospects today on the Senate floor. In Washington, I'm Hillary Wickay for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management, Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation, online at kauffman.org.
College basketball's Sweet 16 gets narrowed down to 8 today. We already know Kansas, Ohio State, UCLA, and Memphis will be in the Elite 8. The deeper these teams go in the tournament, the more money their coaches stand to make. And it's a lot of money. Just 5 years ago, only 2 coaches made $1 million a year. Now, at least a couple dozen do. Our Business of Sports commentator Diana Nyad is with us. Good morning, Diana.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm pulling for my Tar Heels tonight. What's going on with these coaches' salaries?
Well, you know, you talk about your Tar Heels. Okay, those are the huge universities, Carolina, et cetera. But even the you know, what we call kind of what they call the mid-majors, Wichita State, okay, the coach comes out of there. He's making $200,000 a year, which sounds like a pretty darn good salary. Last year, he takes his team to the Sweet 16, and now the schools and, you know, on national television is in the headlines. His salary gets bumped up to $750,000. He gets a private plane given to him for all his recruiting trips in the off season, just by virtue of making the Sweet 16.
I mean, certainly going to Carolina, I know how important basketball is to the school, but doesn't it send a message that the priorities are a little out of whack?
Well, you know, I think it would. Look at Marquette. The coach there, Tom Crean, 2 seasons ago, he made $1.7 million, okay? He was by far the highest paid employee at the school. As a matter of fact, the next highest salary was the dean of business school. His salary, $262,000 compared to $1.7 million. But I guess that dean of business knows that the revenue coming into the school comes from basketball.
So do you think the schools are equating the amount of revenue that comes in from basketball with the coach's salary, and that's why they're getting paid that
sure.
money?
Sure. So some of the schools, it's over 90% of the school revenue comes from football, basketball combined. All the departments of that school, including keeping up the grounds and improving the dormitories, you know, it all spreads out along the school. You know, talk about your school. The president of University of North Carolina said recently, hey, look, you know, we are a fine institution. We recruit great students from all over the world. But the truth is, when it comes time for me to raise money, it's Carolina basketball. That's what I'm selling.
Who are you pulling for?
You know, I wouldn't mind if Ohio State went through this year.
Thanks, Diana.
Okay, thank you.
Our Business of Sports commentator, Diana Nyad. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.